Today, I want to give you two things. Today, I will expose the problem that is causing the problems in our world. And number two, I'm going to show you a quick prescription. No, it's not more cowbell. No, it's actually more emotional intelligence. I will be Dr. Black, and the human psyche will be my patient, and specifically today's human psyche. Have you noticed that people are losing common sense and emotionally going off on people? Have you noticed that we're killing each other in fast food drive-through windows where we got children killing their parents, we got road rage out of control, we got political hatchet jobs, and now, actually real life, literal hatchet jobs. The number of teens who believe that their lives don't matter, what they do doesn't matter, and that their life has no purpose is multiplying exponentially with every re-asking of the question. New workers, young people who have PhDs and MBAs and college degrees and technical skills are not ready for the workplace. Study after study show that people cannot work together anymore. They cannot move through conflict in a healthy way. They cannot even associate with someone who votes differently than they do. There are red lights flashing everywhere, people. See, once a doctor knows what is ailing a patient, see, they can then be aware. And awareness gets us in the battle for the truth, for clarity, for vision. Today, you're going to understand the wile of the enemy. Why do you need to know this? Because of all the battles we face in life, the most constant and the most important is the battle that's waged in our mind. Between the stimulus and the response, there is a space. And in that space is our power. It is our freedom. We cannot control what happens to us. That is outside the realm of our control. But we have full control of what happens in us. It's a distraction. We're so wrapped up in pronouns. You know, what pronouns to use based on what reality the person we are communicating with is living in. Let's move on from pronouns. It's time to focus on prepositions because it's all about location, location, location. Why do people buy and sell real estate? Location, location, location. What is the difference between manifesting and believing? Location, location, location. The timeline is absolutely critical. If you don't know what I'm talking about, go to wayofwarriorpod.com and take a look at some previous podcasts where I talk about the importance of the timeline. Prepositions. What is a preposition? It is a word that shows the relationship of a noun to another word. Prepositions indicate direction, they indicate time, or they indicate location. We must differentiate between what is going on in us and what is going on outside of us or around us. And as a warrior, we must understand our environment, we must understand our enemy, and we must understand our outcome. The number one weapon formed against us is confusion. When people are confused, they don't step out. When people are confused, they don't step up. When people are confused, they don't speak up. When people are confused, they don't act up. When people are confused, they hesitate. The Bible says where there is strife, every other sin is present. And so let me tell you, when there is confusion, there is no vision. It cannot be day and night at the same time. You cannot be grateful and a victim at the same time. I can do them 2 minutes apart, but not at the same time. Two opposing things cannot share the same space and time. And so when there's confusion, there is no vision. For there is division. There is blurred vision. There is more than one vision. There is therefore no vision. It is division. The good book warns us of this and tells us that we have an enemy. Matter of fact, it says, if you are a child of God, the world will hate you. It says, if you love Daddy Yahweh, if we are children of El Elyon, the Lord Most High, then the world has a chip on the shoulder against us. And it also says that our enemy is on the prowl, seeking someone to devour, to trip us up. I think it was Isaiah said, and it's going to be so bad that even the elect could be deceived. Where is the battle? We have many battles in life, but I'm going to suggest, as I have before, that one of the greatest battles we have to fight is between the stimulus and the response. We are called to be aware of the wiles of the devil. And I'm going to tell you right now, and I've heard this when I was a little kid, and I never got it, that the mind is the enemy's playground. And for so long, so many so-called believers said, oh, don't play with your mind. Don't mess with your mind because, oh, it's the devil's playground. You know, I saw this thing about what's evil, you know, the Ouija boards and horoscopes. And I agree with all that. But you know what they put in the evil thing in your new age of manifesting? Like, wow, we are made to create. God used the word manifesting in the Bible all over. We are told to manifest a different attitude, to manifest a different spirit. And yet they put, because people don't know, it's deception. The horoscope, you know, the stars tell a story. There's a sermon in the stars. But the stars don't tell about us. They tell about God. They tell about history. They talk about the world. See, we are told to beware of the wiles of the enemy because he's a great deceiver. And if you don't know what the word wiles means, it's the only place that that word is used in the dictionary in the Bible. And just let me remind you of the Roadrunner show. Because what was the coyote's name? Wile E. Coyote. And who worked with the coyote? The world. You know, the world is in that's it's Acme. Acme's the world. And so, Wile E. Coyote, beware of the wiles of the devil. And we got to know our enemy. The more we understand our enemy, the more ready we are for battle. You know, my brother, Richard Black, he owns some studios called United Studios of Self-Defense. He's a great martial arts expert. Matter of fact, I think he's a 10th Dan Black belt. He's a true master. And he knows katas. You know, katas are patterns. You know, I'm a purple belt. You run certain patterns over and over and over to become second nature. And when he is in battle competing, he identifies the kata, the pattern that he believes that his enemy, his opponent is going to use. And that his opponent then is using whatever kata, whatever pattern he's using. My brother, because he's a master, then counters with a more effective kata or pattern to be victorious. We've got to be able to identify our enemy. What is that wile of the enemy? What are they doing if we're aware of it? And then what is an effective countermeasure prescription? And so here's the question. You know what is ailing our relationships, our work, our environment, our homes, and our hearts? There seems to be a pandemic of emotional ineptitude, a serious lack of emotional intelligence. People are keeping a pound of flesh and losing all ounces of decency and removing dignity from our fellow man or woman. We seem to be keeping a record of wrong but have amnesia of our own shortcomings. We seem to be demanding justice for peace, and yet we want mercy and grace and understanding when we show up less than. Remember, emotional intelligence is the ability to monitor one's own and other people's emotions, to filter between different emotions and label them appropriately. And there's the key word, appropriately. And to use emotional information to guide thinking and behavior in a positive way. Emotional intelligence refers to the ability to identify and manage one's own emotions as well as the emotions of others. Emotional intelligence is generally said to include at least three skills: emotional awareness, or the ability to identify and name one's own emotions, the ability to harness those emotions and apply them to tasks like thinking and problem solving, and the ability to manage emotions, which includes both regulating one's own emotions when necessary and helping others to do the same. Life is full of conflict. It's a contact sport. Whether we're talking about life or art, conflict is a critical part of any storyline. The six basic battles we face, man versus nature, right? Sharknado. Hurricane, earthquake. We had a lot of those in the 70s or 80s. How about man versus man? And see, this is the lie. This is what our enemy has us fighting each other. In my leadership training, I've been doing 32 years. You can go to wayofwarrior.training and read about it. It's intense. And so over the last 32 years, I've continually adapted the training, evolved the training. But I learned a long time ago that you and I pushing together can get a lot more accomplished. This is the lie. This is how the enemy's distracted us. We're not focusing on man versus man. That's not the battle. Third battle is man versus society. The fourth battle is man versus himself, the intifada. That's really what intifada is supposed to be. The internal battle, the struggle. Paul talked about the between the old man and the new man, between the flesh and the spirit, between the man or woman I am today and the man or woman I want to be, right? That man versus himself. That's what I help you fight. I believe one of the greatest battles is the fifth battle, the spiritual battle. To really find out who your God is, because everybody has a God. And the sixth battle, and I believe the greatest battle of all, on par, maybe just a hedge above the spiritual battle because it affects it, is the battle for our identity. Because who am I dictates what I do. Think about that. And we doubt ourselves. It affects everything. But here's the thing. What drives these emotions? Why are these battles there? What drives them? And so I found this research, Roy and Judy Edelson. They've identified the beliefs that play a role in the conflict between groups, because look at the conflicts out there. Look at how we're being agitated. Look at the battles going on. And I'm going to suggest to you what the big problem is, but what it stems from, where it gets its footing from, its soil from, is the battle of the mind. between the stimulus and response. When people say something and do something, what we hold on to, because our mind is six times faster than we talk. So when there's a stimulus, we don't respond to that automatically. What we do is we go to what we know. We go to our past. We go to what we hold on to. We go to our pound of flesh, our record wrong. We see something from our past, or we say something from our past, or we feel something based on our past. And then based on that, we respond. We're not responding to the stimulus. We're responding to our narrative, our feelings about the stimulus. And so it comes down to feelings. This is why emotional intelligence is the key. And so plays a key role in the conflict between groups? Check these out. They listed five things. Number one, superiority. The belief revolves around an individual's conviction that they are better than other people in important ways, or that they have a sense of specialness. The group worldview contains shared convictions, moral superiority. Number two, it says injustice, right? No justice, no peace. No justice, no peace. Look at number two, the reason for this conflict, injustice. This is the perceived, listen to that key word, perceived mistreatment by others of the world at large. The group worldview believes that it has significant legitimate grievances. Do you see what's going on in the world? Number three, vulnerability, right? The most vulnerable in our society, except the unborn. They're not vulnerable. Everybody else is vulnerable. This belief focuses on a person's conviction that they are perpetually living in harm's way, right? Number four, distrust. There, right? See how effective the enemy is? This focus on the perceived hostility and bad intentions, right? Telling you why they don't like you. They've always hated you. Every problem in the world is because of those people. It's because of your skin color, because of what bathroom you use. Do you see how it's agitated? We're pitting people against each other. And look at the fifth reason for this agitation, helplessness. This conviction believes, and this is why this is one of the biggest things that ails us. You're going to see how this helplessness then justifies. It justifies someone who can claim victim status to now attack, persecute, destroy, kill, harm someone else, but they're justified. See, we have this cacophony of emotions constantly being emotionally hijacked. We are ready to pop, ready to explode. Do you feel it? Have you driven lately? Do you see it on the news? Do you read it on your feeds? It's just not out there, people. It's not out there. It's in here. The tension is palpable. And think about this. Who benefits when the society is in chaos? It has to be elected officials. I mean, you and I don't benefit when things are in chaos. You know, why are we yelling at each other? Why is there construction everywhere? Why are people backed up and honking and running red lights and shooting people on the freeway and getting agitated? If you can catch about 100 red fire ants that live in the southwestern desert, and also about 100 of those large black ants that also live there, if you were to put those 200 ants in a jar, the same jar, not much will happen. You want to create chaos? Shake the jar vigorously. Shake it hard. And then dump it hard out on the ground. Watch what happens. Oh, yeah, the red ants will attack the black ants. The black ants will attack the red ants. It will be just mayhem. It'll be at NATO. It'll be, The red ants think the enemy is the black ants. The black ants think the enemy is the red ants. And all those ants put together never do figure out that the real enemy is whoever's shaking the jar. And what we got to realize is that there's a lot of battles going on out there, and there's a lot of battles going out in here. And as a warrior, we've got to learn, what is our good fight? What tools do we have available? What is going on? What is the weapon formed against us? Remember, no weapon formed against us will prosper, but they will be formed against us. And we have these interactions. Dr. Eric Byrne called them transactions. Our life is a series of interactions with other people. But we also have these interactions in our head. And some of us interact with somebody once or twice or three times, but then we never see them again. But in our head, we interact with them daily for decades, right? See, in these interactions, these little battles in our head, in our heart, in the headlines, in our bedrooms, in our boardrooms, there are perceived winners and losers. And in those outcomes, we regroup, we remember, we relitigate, we rebel. That's the key. We got to understand how we're doing it. And let me tell you, the wild enemy, let me tell you what ails America. Let me tell you what you're seeing in the newspaper. Let me tell you why people, young people are not prepared for work. Let me tell you why young people are mutilating themselves. Why there's like a 500% increase in the last 3 years of teenage girls getting mastectomies. How young boys who haven't even reached puberty are getting their wee-wees cut off. They're getting medical operations that will forever make them a medical experiment. Dysphoria. It's all around us. Between the stimulus and response, there's a space. And in that space is our power and our freedom. And so what's going on is something called the drama triangle. The drama triangle. What the Drama Triangle is a model of dysfunctional social interactions. It was created by psychotherapist Stephen Cartman, that's with a K, K-A-R-P-M-A-N. It's about a 45-page booklet. It's in the realm of transactional analysis, highly recommend it. Each point on the triangle represents a common and ineffective response to conflict. So there's three of them. The number one is the victim. We live in a country of victims. We get our DNA test to see what percentage of a victim we are. The victim stance is poor me. The victim feels victimized with everything, oppressed, everything, helpless, hopeless, powerless, ashamed, sees unable to make decisions, solve problems, take pleasure in life, or achieve insight. The victim will seek out a villain to blame and also a hero who will save the day. However, they will also perpetuate the victim's feelings of helplessness, those two, their enablers. The victim typically sees themselves as the innocent victim. Of course, they're never at fault, having no fault in the situation or relationship. But what do you know? Here comes the hero in the story, the rescuer. Now, rescuer sounds good, right? It's not in a psychological realm. A rescuer is doing for someone else what they should be able to do for themselves, so they never learn. They never pick themselves up by their bootstraps and learn on their own. They never fail forward. They never learn from their mistakes and learn to make better choices next time because everything's someone else's fault. So they never have to grow. They never have to self-reflect. It's everybody else. I don't care what's going on. I don't care what happened to your past. If you think the problem's out there, I'm going to tell you what your number one problem is that the problem's in there, not out there. The rescuer's line is, let me save you. Classic enabler. The rescuer feels guilty if they don't go to the rescue, yet their rescuing has negative effects. It keeps the victim dependent and gives the victim permission to fail and stay the victim. Because without a victim, you don't need a rescuer. And the persecutor, a.k.a. the villain. The persecutor insists this is your own fault. The persecutor is controlling, blaming, critical, oppressive, angry, authoritative, rigid, superior. Often a victim. A victim who is sick of being victimized decides to counterattack, becoming a villain to the other party. A victim that is not rescued quick enough or to their own liking becomes a persecutor. In the Drama Triangle, the rescuer saves people. They see as vulnerable, they work hard, offers help unasked for. Persecutors unaware of their own power and therefore discounts it. Power used is negative, often destructive. The victim's overwhelmed by own vulnerability, doesn't take responsibility for own situation. You see, the Drama Triangle is a concept that defines the three roles people typically take in high conflict situations. And contrary to its name, the triangle doesn't have to involve three different people. It's us. It simply follows how different personalities affect each other and how we really go from one to the other. Again, the victim. When problems arise, the victim tends to look helplessly inward. They spin a small anxiety. You know, they won't answer boss's email. They get passive-aggressive. Woe is me. Any constructive criticism is an onslaught and a personal attack. They take any small thing and turn it into an outsized disaster. Hello, drama queen. Hello, drama king. The rescuer is the classic enabler who swoops in to save the day. He or she can be relied upon to always put out a fire to show up at the last minute. Well-meaning to a fault, the fixer behavior can lead to resentment, burnout. They become reluctant confronters by nature, and rescuers don't speak up even when wronged. And then after a while, guess what the rescuer becomes? Right, the victim. The persecutor. We all know the persecutor. The go-to strategy, often controlling, blaming, attacking, criticizing. In arguments, they will put you down and attempt to shame you into forgiveness. The persecutor's refrain, it's all your fault. Now, that's the problem. That's what ails us. And we don't need more cowbell, or do you like some cowbell? What we need is emotional intelligence. This is the good fight. So four quick steps to escape the drama triangle. Number one, you got to be aware. You know, all leaders have clear vision. Where am I now? Where am I going? What will it take to get there and how long? First step is identify your role. In other words, where are you now? Most people are never honest enough with themselves to identify where they are now. You can't escape the drama triangle without awareness, one, that you're on it, and two, where you're at. Then number two, ask yourself which of these labels you identify with most. I love to save people. I got to be aware of the rescuer. I can play victim easily. Man, I've had to fight that. I'm not a victim of anything. I got an unmerited favor. But yet, boy, in the past, up until recently, I'd play the victim in everything. And boy, a persecutor, I used to live in the persecutor's realm, holier than now. But I'm aware, and I find myself on it, and I get myself off. Which brings us to step number three. Do things differently, right? The definition of sanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results. So do things differently. Once you're aware of your part, stop doing it. right? Victims, don't outsource your self-esteem by seeking validation, right? Strengthen your decision-making skills. Act before you feel ready. Don't sit and wait. Rescuers, do something different. Pay attention to what drains your energy, what people, what specific activities. To curb people-pleasing, set up some boundaries. Say no more often than you say yes. And persecutors, replace accusation. Replace accusatory, bold, big statements like, you always forget to call, you never love me, you never let me finish the sentence, blah, blah, blah. Replace them with I statements. And then what I've noticed, and I feel this way, or one thing I feel is this. Don't make it law. Say, this is my perception. And you know, instead of doing all those things, how about this? Aspire to replace the drama triangle with compassion, with listening, with assertiveness. Rule number one about being a leader is not about you. Get off yourself, leader. Someone called it the winner's triangle, so the drama's triangle. And by the way, there's a fourth step. Step four, stand your ground. Guess what I said? Keep in mind that when you change your behavior, people around you will balk. They won't like it. They make it offensive. Eric Byrne wrote a book in 1965 called The Games People Play. And one thing I've learned, that when you disengage and you no longer play a game, it ticks people off. God bless him. I hope he does well, but I'm not going to play anymore. So people may get defensive. They may feel hurt. That's okay. It doesn't mean you're a bad person. Their response doesn't have to put ownership onto you. It's their response. It's a reflection of normal growing pains. We must remember our power and our freedom, our peace is in our control. Remember, it's Dr. Viktor Frankl who lost all entire family, friends in Auschwitz, who said between the stimulus and the response, there's a space. And in that space is our power and our freedom. Can I suggest in that space is also where we will find our peace? There is no justice this side of eternity. But what we are really seeking, let me suggest, is peace. I have a shirt that says, no Jesus, no peace. Another N-O-N-O. No Jesus, no peace. But then below it says, no Jesus, K-N-O-W. No peace, K-N-O-W. Today, I told you I was going to introduce you to the problem. It's the drama triangle. And today, I told you I'd give you a simple remedy, those four steps to get off the drama triangle. And it's really about knowing emotional intelligence. Because when we know emotional intelligence, we know mental peace. And when there's no emotional intelligence, N-O, there's no emotional peace. Thank you for listening to the Way of Warrior podcast, Fighting the Good Fight. Please like this show and subscribe to get more content like this. Also, I'd love to hear from you, so please leave me a review. If you would like more information or you would like to connect with me directly, please reach out to me. I got life-changing trainings, I got coaching, or if you just want to say hey or ask me some questions, please visit wayofwarrior.training. That's wayofwarrior.training. Until next time, remember, when you live your life like it matters, it does. It's the way of warrior.